As Roxon came out of the southeast perimeter of the trees around the Free Fighter camp, he could see immediately that the kid had been telling the truth. Weird wasn't the half of it. For coming off the plains in a 50-yard line that stretched back a good mile was an army that looked like it was out of the Arabian Nights. At the front was the cavalry, riding tall black steeds that looked more like the horses of the 20th century than the Free Fighters' own mutated breeds. Atop them, carrying their fighting flags and banners, sat white-robed warriors with long pointed beards and curved swords at their sides. Behind them came the infantry, long lines of turbaned troops bearing an odd assortment of both primitive and modern weapons, machine guns and bows, lances and bazookas. And far in the rear, Rock could see from atop Snorter were men pushing immense wooden structures on roughly hewn wheels. There were ropes and pulleys and levers all over the damn things, but for the life of him, the Doomsday Warrior couldn't imagine what they were. The two riders at the very front of the army drew closer, shielded from the sun by men riding alongside them, holding large silk umbrellas. Countless diamonds, sapphires, and blood-red rubies burned on their robes and turbans. Set afire by the stabbing rays of the afternoon sun, they made quite an impressive picture, and Roxon knew by the calmness of their demeanor and the tornado just behind their eyes that they were fighters of the highest order.
Bowker!
No thanks. I don't bow. Not even to kings or holy men. What are you?
A general, fool. And by what odious appellation are you known to those with the misfortune to be in your company?
Ted Roxon, an officer of the Army of the Reunited States of America.
The mounted Sikh general seemed to turn to stone for a moment as his mind took in the words and looked at his partner with a quizzical glance as if wondering whether to believe it. The younger man looked down at Roxon with a little less antagonism.
What can never be allowed to be opened?
The seventh seal, for within it lies 10,000 years of darkness.
You are Roxon? I am General Sikh Panchali. The man to my right is General Ragdar. We are the Royal Indian Sikh Army. We are under the personal orders of Premier Vasili to join with your army, which I'm afraid I do not see anywhere. Nor do I see lines of troops to greet us or buglers signaling our arrival. This is not how we do things in the Asias. The ritual of preparing for battle is as important as the execution of it. I must say I am disappointed.
Sorry, General. We've never been much for tradition. But we're all kick-ass fighters, I promise you that. How the hell did you get here anyway? Just marching along out of nowhere?
Our fleet of transport planes touched down about 50 miles east of here. From there, we marched.
Through the wastelands?
Ah, the wastelands. Compared to the mountainous regions we have fought in, your wastelands are like an oasis to us. We come from the least hospitable terrain on this planet, General Roxon. Landscapes that can only be likened to the dark side of the moon.
And your English, you speak so...
Of course we do. Every Sikh officer speaks at least four languages, many five, even six. English is one.
I must apologize for Sikh Panchali. He has been killing men for too long to remember how to greet them, I am afraid. But for both of us, I give greetings and prayers for success at our joint venture.
I hate to bring it up, but your army is just standing out in the open, completely exposed to air attack. Don't you think your men should have better cover? Should get into the woods?
We do not fear attack. In the 100 years my army has been in existence, no one has defeated us, General Roxon. Those who dare attack us are welcome to try. We run from no man.
And now, you must inform us of your battle plans so that we may begin briefing our men.
Well, to be honest with you, we've been wondering just that thing ourselves. You wouldn't have any ideas, would you?
You want to take the fort, correct?
Yes,
then we... Then it is simple. We are experts of siege, of laying waste to indestructible structures. You have undoubtedly heard of our exploits, our conquering of the entire Tibetan armies, our taking of whole nations... Even over here.
Sorry to disappoint you, but we don't hear much in the way of international news. In fact, we just heard about the Australian continent being free of Russia.
Bah! The Kiwi scum, always bragging about their lucky victories. The drunkards have luck, nothing more. If Vasily had sent us, I promise you, that continent would be in ruins.
Well, with that, I'm sure we'd all be fascinated to hear about your exploits.
Most excellent! We shall prepare a feast to delight the senses. The first meal between allies. This will truly be a night to remember.
That night, the Free Fighters came to the banquet thrown by the two Sikh generals. Rock brought Kim, Rona, and the Rock team along with 50 or so free fighting officers who would be leading the rest of the American men into battle. Rock and the top staff agreed that it would be wise for at least the officers of the two armies to meet and get a nodding acquaintance, since they would be fighting for their lives together within 36 hours. The Sikh generals had erected a long, brightly colored tent with high billowing silk walls and banners, intricately embroidered with lions' heads and dragons. Inside the tent was like a dream of Asian jaded luxury. Long tables filled with fruit, steaming platters of meat and fish, decanters and bottles of multicolored liquids carried around on silver platters by robed servants. The guests of honor were led in and to their places on immense overstuffed satin pillows that lay around thick rugs, which covered the entire tented ground. Ragdar glanced towards them from his own pillow. Two young, bare midriff women on either side of him were feeding grapes into his mouth.
Excellent, excellent. So glad you could all come.
Roxanne sat on one side of him as Kim and Rona each tried to grab the pillow closest to the Doomsday Warrior. Chen, Detroit, McCaughlin, and Archer all walked slowly around the place, gawking at the extravagant silks and weavings and gilded cow's heads that hung on the tent walls. And the food. Mountains of it. A feast one could only imagine in a dream. Vasily's impromptu airlift of men and supplies must have been massive.
Please, have a slice of the roast beef. Enjoy the yogurt and the honey sparrow eggs. There is a collection of winter vegetables near the end of the table.
Wow. Where did you manage to get all this stuff? These things don't grow around here.
General Roxon, one thing our fighting forefathers learned very early in the formation of the Royal Sikh Army was to have the best of everything. It is only worth dying when one's life is rich and full. Thus, we carry out Moscow's orders, and we are rewarded with the finest things that a man can have. One entire transport plane was filled with boxes and refrigerated containers of our culinary needs.
Wow. Now this is the way to fight a war.
Rona walked to the buffet table and scooped up a few turtle eggs in chocolate sauce. Detroit's own plate was piled so high with duck and truffles that things were slipping off onto the rugs.
Why can't we bring lunch boxes like this along on all our missions?
The rest of the team dug in with much enthusiasm, eating like it was their last meal. Archer wolfed down whole platefuls in a bite and reached for whatever else passed by.
What's going on?
Our entertainment is beginning.
A line of dancing girls came out, dressed in gossamer veils, which barely concealed their charms. They began undulating, moving their stomachs in hypnotizing motions. Five roast pigs were carried into the hall, an exotic spiked fruit in each of their mouths.
And you told me I had to send all this back before we left Sikh Panchali. You see, General Roxon, the ancients knew it well. All their fighting men, early Egyptians, the Greeks, Caesars, Alexander the Greats, they always made war in style with feasts and women along the way. Why must a combat soldier suffer his hours when he is not fighting? He suffers enough in battle. Read, it is such an outmoded concept. I am surprised at your backwardness in such matters.
You're goddamn right there's backwardness in such matters. This is the United States you're in now, pal. And our faiths, our tradition, our everything dictate that we do things our own way. And that means no dancing girls. The Free Fighters got us.
She smiled sweetly at Roxon and then at Kim. She folded her hands across her ample chest, satisfied that she'd at least said her piece. Once the feast had finished, Panchali and Ragdar gathered the top Free Fighter commanders around the dinner table. Ragdar pulled out a large pencil-drawn map and looked down at the table.
What's wrong, Sikh Ragdar?
I am afraid there is no room for us to strategize. Our American counterparts have made so many dirty dishes.
Ah, no matter. There, empty table.
Ah, Thank you. Now, this is a map of the fortress. You can see it from all four flanks.
This map is remarkable. Where did you dig it up?
We make our own maps, General Chen. The moment we arrived, our cartographers were in the field making drawings, using surveying equipment to get the exact distances and dimensions of Minsk.
Yes, General Roxon. We have found through costly experience that the more one knows exactly what the enemy's strengths and weaknesses are, where his highest walls and lowest walls are, their makeup, the more one knows everything about him. As in making a fine piece of carpentry, the results will come out perfect if the measurements are correct. War is a science to us, General, not a game of chance.
Roxon was impressed as the generals went over the maps, which showed the approaches to the outer walls, the entrances that must be breached. Whatever their kingly airs, the Sikh men seemed to be the real thing, military strategists who knew how to kill better than the enemy. The Doomsday Warrior paid close attention to their words, their concepts. There was a lot to be learned from men such as these, steeped in siege warfare.
So, you see, it's really absurdly simple. We create diversionary attacks on the south, east, and west walls, but concentrate our main attack on the north wall, the least protected because of the inhospitable terrain. But what is thought uncrossable by Russian planners is, for us, an 8-lane superhighway. Once the north wall is taken, cavalry and infantry will attack, sending all forces into the fortress. They have been instructed to kill only KGB and release Red troops. We are, as you can see, completely prepared. The situation is in hand.
And what of my men? Where do we come in?
Oh, really? We're used to doing it alone. At least until the first fighters open the gates. I think you'd just be in the way.
I don't think you understand, General. We're in this together. We asked for you to come here to help us. I don't mind if you run the show, since you seem to know what you're doing strategically, but my men are to be in on every phase of it. You may be great fighters, but I dare say you've never fought the KGB or Colonel Kilov over there in Asia. And as dangerous and fierce as those you faced may have been, I have a feeling your men will be glad there are some American kick-ass free fighters along to point a few things out.
I just don't think you could be...
Now, I'm sure what my co-general means is that we'd be glad to have you along as our men and your men know just how to place themselves so they won't accidentally injure one another. Isn't that right, brother?
Oh, of course, of course. You must excuse me, generals. I am so clumsy with words sometimes. A soldier who sometimes forgets the social niceties that allow for interaction between men.
At any rate, we attack at midnight tomorrow, and...
Wait. Your equipment, those huge wooden things. What are they? How...
Please, General Roxon. It's so difficult to explain it all. You'll see tomorrow night. A battle, as they say, is worth 1,000 military manuals. As we move into position, you'll see it all. If you want, pick your own team and come in with the first of us.
That sounds like a wonderful idea.
I propose a toast to our fine Asian fighters. Whoever they killed in the past, we thank them for coming to our aid. To the Sikhs!
To the Sikhs!
And my turn. Thank you. A toast to fighting men everywhere, whatever their rank or army. To the combat soldiers of history!
To the soldiers of history!
And may I say that the American Rebel Army possesses some of the most beautiful women I have ever seen in my travels around a good portion of this planet. To General Rona and General Kim.
Both women blushed, not daring to look at either Ragdar or Roxon. And quaffed theirs in a single gulp, too. With that, it was off to the races, with toasts by every man sitting around the table. There were toasts to great generals of the past, toasts to battles, toasts to presidents. After several more rounds, it was toasts to movie stars of the pre-nuke days, and then toasts to the banquet's attendees, one by one. If the intention of the feast was to get the top ranks of the two armies better acquainted, it was working. Dancing contests erupted, arm wrestling championships, and boxing matches as they went at it, testing each other's skills, each other's mettle as men, and being amazed at each nation's prowess. As the men's macho came out, so did the women's machismo. There's something about knowing you might die on the morrow and consuming 5, 6, or 7 high-proof drinks that sends one's inhibitions into hibernation. Rona watched some of the men gyrating atop other tables with a twinkle in her eyes.
That's it. Make room, boys.
Rona began dancing, giving her lover obvious and wicked looks. Not to be outdone, Kim removed her clodhoppers, leaped up, and joined her several feet away. Drinks were handed to the women, and they gulped them down without a second thought. Kim was the first to remove an article of clothing as her baggy pants fell down, and she stepped out of them without missing a beat. Roxanne didn't know whether to stop her.
Ashamed of your body, Rona?
Ashamed of these?
The alcohol, the dizziness, the rising chorus of whistles pushed them both to heights they would never ordinarily have reached. But now, in a whirlwind of challenges back and forth, they stripped off one garment after another until both of them danced atop the table in just panties, swinging their bodies around like belly dancers of old, their breasts bouncing hypnotically, their locks of hair streaking in flashes of red and gold. Rock's own brain was somewhere on the floor. He hadn't drunk this much for years, but was already beyond the ability to judge or care. Somewhere in his head, he knew they would regret this tomorrow, but now he had a stupid feeling that everything was fine. He watched the two near-naked women, the two bodies, each perfect in its own unique way, swinging around, displaying themselves. Suddenly, Kim stopped in her tracks.
I feel so...
Jen, is she...
She's out cold. I'll put her in the other room.
Girl can't hold her liquor. Give me another.
Rona, I don't...
Oh, shut up, Mr. Rock. Fucking minor eating. Who here can read my mind? He can. He can read me like a fucking book. Tell me, what am I thinking right now?
I'd really rather not.
Oh, it'll be fun. You tell me what I'm thinking. If you're right, I'll take another drink. You're wrong, you drink. Here, I'll give you a freebie. Give me a fucking drink. Thank you. Fuck. See? Now it's your...
Okay, Kim's sleeping soundly. I'll tuck her in too, Ted.
Thanks, Al.
Well, the weaker sex I see has fallen by the wayside. And what of you, General Roxon? What are your drinking abilities? Are they beyond your beautiful concubine's abilities?
Load me up, and we'll see what happens.
They drank, and they drank some more. By 4:30 in the morning, there were but 3 men still conscious in the entire tent. Roxon, General Panchali, and Detroit. The trio sat around the table surrounded by bodies lying everywhere on the rug.
Now I'll get the good stuff. I'll be right back. This is triple distilled coconut gin, aged 40 years. My army made this on a slow year. It's the best stuff I ever tasted, and it knocks you on your fucking ass. A toast.
A toast.
To my whore of a mother and son of a bitch of a father, who in their drunkenness produced the greatest general the world has ever known. Oh.
Detroit.
Yeah, looks like it's just you and me now, General Roxon. Let's see which one's the better man. This is a good space. Right here. Rexon, drink for drink, punch for punch, till one man falls.
Sounds like fun.
You first. Oh,
no, I insist. You're my country, and I'm your guest. Please.
Okay. You ready for it?
I'm ready for it.
You ready?
I'm ready.
You sure?
I'm fucking sure.
You gonna get up, General Rarkson?
I'm up. I'm up. Sally.
Well, I'll be. Ha! No man's taking that punch. Another drink.
My turn.
Take your best.
My best?
That was your best.
Just making sure where you are. Pusaki. Pusaki. I'm ready for the next. Guess I won.
Colonel Kilov strode the outer walkway of the 12th floor of the Army Command Building in the center of Fort Minsk. His was the highest position in the fortress city, and from it he scanned the surrounding land with a pair of infrared binoculars.
I know you are coming, Zhadnov. Vasily cannot let this insult stand. He will send you back to take his wretched nation, and I will be waiting here. Yet, still nothing. You have to move soon, Grandfather. My hold over the army is growing with each passing day, with each passing hour. And as for the bombs? I found five. Five antimatter missiles, mine to use as I see fit. You had best hurry up in Moscow, best try and take me, so I can show everybody my power. But those fires... My scouts tell me they are nothing more than primitive fools with swords. If they were to attack the fort, they would surely try to hide at least. But... Let them try. Let them see the 20-foot thick walls of concrete, its racks of heavy artillery and machine guns, auto-controlled and fired. Cannons against swords, tanks against horses. It would be... amusing. Heidnalls, just in case. If they do come, if the fools choose to die, it would be worth it to see it in red and blue and silver.
Within minutes, he could feel the mild psychedelic wash into his veins and fill him with a tingling sensation. His pupils began dilating, letting in more light to the chemical-saturated brain. The whole sky seemed to blur, stars arcing, the blackness filled with galaxies of neon lights. Kilov's mouth dropped open as the combined effects of the Heitendals mixed with the 20 other things he'd taken that day, all reacting to make his blood feel like it was boiling, his veins as if electric currents were shooting through them. He felt woozy.
Everything sucking in, tunnel vision. It's all a single point. I should sit down. No, no. Oh, that's better. I am Kilov, the skull, destroyer of worlds. I can handle my drugs better than any man alive.
Now his arteries swelled like the oceans, sending a tide of swooning sensations through his body. He slowly lifted the glasses again, barely moving, taking 20 seconds to bring them to his face. He tilted them up toward the flashing neon signs in the sky. The lights of the nebulas and star systems filled the glasses and poured into his maddened brain in a waterfall of images. He saw the actual meaning of his life.
Incredible. Incredible.
The stars filled him with messages from the dark gods at the far side of the universe. The glasses suddenly seemed to catch hold of an ultra-darkness, surrounded by swirling masses of burning diamonds. Kilov tried to peer into it, into the void which called him from a trillion light years off. Yes, he could see the magnetic circles of black flame pulling tighter and disappearing into a blackness that had no light. The drugs fully entered his system, and in his hallucinations, he was transported through the vast reaches of frozen space and into the spiraling darkness that burned deep within the star mass. Everything fell in, and nothing returned.
This is my home. I am here to equalize, to finish the job man started 100 years ago. Where there was once life, I bring death. Where there was order, I make entropy. I am the energy of the dead, of all that is dark. I am here to take Earth itself into the void, to ignite a nova of black fire unto this night. That is why I am here. That is what I am fated to do. And there is no man with the power to stop me.
Yo.
Where have... Oh, shit.
Yeah. Coffee?
What time is it?
Blood pressure, Rock. Blood pressure. Don't even try to think or say a word until you've had at least 5 cups of coffee. Then we'll talk about it.
Heeding the advice, Roxon rose, taking one slow step at a time towards Detroit and a steaming hot cup of coffee. The coffee burned his lips, but he could feel it cut through the drunken cobwebs in his skull instantly. After the fourth sip, Roxon slowly surveyed the inside of the banquet tent. It was a wreck, as if a herd of elephants, or at least water buffalo, had thought it was the local wading pool and come to do some splashing. Everything in sight was cracked, broken, or crushed to a pulp. Trays of overturned food and bowls of squashed fruit lay in wild abandon. Suddenly, Rock realized that he and Detroit were the only ones in the place.
Where the hell? Oh, I've been shot in the head and it's better than this.
It's not too bad. Panchali says it should go away in a couple of hours.
Oh, that's good. So where's everyone else?
Gone, Rock.
Gone? Where'd they go?
To the battle site, but cool down. We got plenty of time. You and me, we drank that blue stuff. That's why we're here. And everyone else split. Stuff's strong, Rock. My head feels like it fell into the receiving basket for a guillotine.
If they start that battle without me, I'll kill the bastards.
It's only about 14:30. There's still over 10 hours before we're supposed to strike.
Wait, did Rona and Kim head out too?
Nope, but they're still sleeping it off in the next room. But they had the good fortune to pass out before that coconut gin shit.
Half an hour later, both men headed haltingly outside and found their brids tied to a post. There was still activity in the Sikh camp, men manning kitchens and command tents, but clearly the bulk of the army was gone. They rode through the woods, going 8 miles out of the way to reach the northern approach to Minsk. Slowly, Rock's headache vanished as he stretched out his arms and legs, twisting the muscles this way and that while he rode, trying to work them free of 1,000 kinks.
Oh. Oh, Kim! Kim, wake up! Hurry up! We're gonna miss the battle! The battle! Hey, where are my clothes?
They looked around and found their combat fatigues and Liberator rifles on an oak chest.
Kim.
Yeah, Rona?
Kim, we... One of us might die out there today. I think...
Yeah, let's shake on it. If we live, we'll work something out about Rock. I've grown fond of you.
And I of you, Kim. Let's be friends.
With a handshake, they declared a personal truce, then left the tent. By the time he and Detroit reached Panchale's and Ragdar's forces hidden in woods a half mile from the northern reach, the sun was setting fast, and Rock's guts were finally sorting themselves out. He looked around the Sikh forces, which spread far back into the woods, taking in the rows of archers, horsemen, and the immense devices that the generals had built.
Ah, General Roxon. We wondered if you were going to make it at all.
I'd better not find out you put poison or something in that juice you were feeding me last night.
Come now, General Roxon. We have much to do. You have beaten me at my own game. As far as I'm concerned, you are an honorary member of the Royal Sikh Army. Come, see our siege equipment. It is time you saw what they are for.
Panchali led Rocks into a grove of high trees beneath which sat 10 immense wooden contraptions, apparently pulled by hand all the way around the fort. Roxon walked up to the exotic war machines, staring at the wide wheels, the steel cups at the ends of the long wooden poles, which were attached to pieces of rubber, stretched far back, ready to snap their loads forward.
Catapults, General Roxon! A weapon as old as war itself, but with a small difference. Normal catapults toss rocks, boulders. These are good for destroying castles and turrets made of stone. But for concrete, we have a little something extra planned, courtesy of our Chinese neighbors. As you'll see, effective. Yes, quite effective.
So, this is your artillery?
Well, this and our artillery unit, of course.
Panchali swept his hand to the right, where hundreds of men sat cross-legged, their longbows next to them, quivers of arrows behind their backs, awaiting the call to attack.
Giant slingshots and bows and arrows? That's how we're going to take on Kilov? Just blow and the walls come tumbling down.
Exactly, General Roxon. We'll huff and we'll puff, and we'll blow those goddamned walls straight down to hell.
All across America, in the dead of the night, the free fighters and their Sikh allies edged toward the KGB-controlled Red Fortresses. Catapult and machine gun, mortar and grenade units all marched side by side toward the imposing walls of the concrete cities. At the stroke of 1 o'clock a.m., they would strike. K-Day, Kilov's day to die, had arrived. All was bedlam in the woods north of Fort Minsk as the Sikh army made its final preparations. The immense catapults, looking more like mobile drawbridges than functioning weapons, were pushed up to the very edges of the forest and placed in open spaces between groves of trees so they had a clear line of fire to the fortress. Other towering devices made of logs lashed together in upright configurations and standing on wheels were also placed near the mile-long clearing that surrounded the Red Stronghold. But Rock, sitting on the sidelines, couldn't figure out what the hell they were, as he saw no buckets for heaving things, no stretched strips of rubber pulling their load back. He, Archer, Chen, McCaughlin, and Detroit stood by the edge of the woods, watching Panchali and Ragdar rush madly around on horseback, overseeing the last-second adjustments and problems. The free fighters had never felt so helpless. They were the ones who strode into battle in the first ranks, the men who were used to running shows, not being stagehands in them. They sat on their haunches, resting for the battle, and watched what may be the toughest fighting force on Earth.
Catapult crews, man your weapons!
Robed, turbaned warriors rushed to the weapons and filled their yard-wide steel cups with wooden boxes sealed tight as drums, packing two or three of them into each firing cup. Rock's squad stood up, unslinging their liberators. Chen is Star Knives. Archer is Sturdy Crossbow. The Doomsday Warrior looked over to the left about 150 yards away, where half of the Century City Free Fighter Army milled about, waiting for their chance. The rest of the men were spread around Fort Minsk to create diversionary attacks against the other three walls. The fortress looked impregnable from where Roxanne stood, a veritable mountain taking up the whole sky to the north. He felt a churning, sickly feeling in his stomach as he wondered if his whole plan to ally with the Reds was insane, if he'd perhaps gone mad from breathing in too many radioactive poisons.
Ready! Aim! Fire!
The loads shot like rockets through the night air, the boxes spinning wildly, end over end, with none of the perfect trajectories or geometric purity associated with the smooth arc of an artillery shell. But then, beauty doesn't much matter when you're trying to blow the other man into mush. Nearly 20 of the explosive-filled crates migrated over the barren field in a curve that took them almost 300 feet up. They reached their peak altitude just about midfield, and then came barreling down like a shipment of supermarket goods lost in space. As they fell, a small charge ignited. The boxes burst open, countless parcels of TNT and fragmentation bombs raining down upon the unsuspecting guards.
Catapult crews, load the dustmaker!
The north wall of Fort Minsk shook as if in the grip of an earthquake, as hairline fractures spiderwebbed across it.
Catapults! Fire at will! Archers! Shields forward!
While Roxanne had been watching the wall, all the Sikh archers had gathered and taken positions behind the high wooden walls on wheels. 8 of the 60-foot-high wooden structures, built on wheels as tall as 2 men, started forward, each hauled by a team of 12 horses. They moved slowly out of the woods and across the field toward the fortress, already lit up with curtains of flame. The teams of archers had all climbed to different places on the portable turrets, pointing arrows mounted with sticks of dynamite towards the fort.
Ragdoll! When the hell do we get to join the party?
Ah, but first we must soften up the meat, tenderize it. Then we will eat the beast.
Gah!
The giant wooden shields had gotten only halfway to the fort. Flares shot up from the KGB gunners and burst into light, illuminating the cleared field with the intensity of a noonday sun. A cloud of arrows shot into the air, impacting the slowly falling flares. The burning flares were disintegrated, and the cover of darkness was returned.
Holy shit! These guys got their shit together! I thought I knew it all! See that?
It's what you call the crude approach to war. Just blow up everything in your way.
Crude, but efficient. Really efficient.
The shielded archers drew to within 100 yards of the wall. A large group rushed from behind the turrets and unleashed a volley of arrows over the top of the shattered ramparts. The dynamite-laden barbs filled the air, sparkling under the moonlight. They descended as one down the other side. The moment one group released their arrows, they ran back behind the wooden wall, and another squad rushed out to release their own deadly volley.
Another squad forward!
Thousands of Sikh warriors streamed out across the field at full run, holding the long rickety ladders beneath their arms. When the ladder man reached midfield, Panchali turned to Roxanne with a smile.
Now it is our turn. Ready?
The two leaders held up their arms, Panchali holding his sword, Roxanne his shock pistol. As one, they swung their weapons towards the fort.
Charge!
From out of the woods along a 500-yard front, the horsemen emerged, the Sikh fighters carrying brilliantly colored war banners, their swords pulled free of the jeweled scabbards, and across the field from them, their handguns and 9mm liberators in their hands, the Free Fighters in their olive and khaki combat uniforms. Panchali pointed toward the north wall, and through the mist of cordite and powdered dirt, Roxanne saw a rubble-filled hole blown through.
Towards the break! We ride!
Artillery, watch out!
Body parts flew in all directions, but the commando squads reached the wall at that very moment and threw the rickety assault ladders up against the walls. Within seconds, the Sikh fighters were over the top and engaging in fierce hand-to-hand fighting with the confused KGB troops on the ramparts. They drew their guns, but revolvers are of little use in a sword fight.
They're almost there!
The break in the wall appeared larger as they flew toward it. Rock brought up his shock pistol, ready to fire at anyone with a uniform. Panchali's sword, held high above his ruby-laden turban, looked like the shimmering lightning bolt of a god, ready to descend and take out whole cities. Rock and the Sikh general were the first to reach the wall, and they pushed their steeds up and over the smoking pile of rubble that had once been the impenetrable north side of Fort Minsk. The animals climbed the unsteady pile of rubble, rising a good 15 feet from the ground, and headed down the other side, right into the belly of the beast, and smack into a welcoming committee of heavily armed KGB troops.
Fire!
Countless Sikh and free-fighting men streamed in, dispatching KGB blackshirts by the dozen. But Chala used only his sword. Sikhs and free-fighters poured in from the opening, and blackshirts fell by the dozen. Rock glanced around quickly, seeing the rest of his team, and even Rona and Kim right in the thick of it, riding side by side, sending out a blistering wall of firepower that blasted everything in front of them as they went.
Good shots, lad, but are we inefficient?
What would you?
God.
That's right. The Sikhs helped me mount the 50 on my bridge.
But what about?
He's got cotton in his ears. Watch! Oh. It's like he just got a massage. Oh, you want another one, Elsie? Here you go. Man on your right.
Thanks.
There's an entrance to inside. Yeah.
Rock and Panchali galloped into a long, wide corridor with rounded walls and ceilings made of thousands of hand-painted ceramic tiles. They shot through the hall and entered a large oval intersection from which all the roads of the city seemed to fan out.
Hold up!
Ha ha! I love it!
General Panchali turned to Roxen with a wild look in his eyes. His sword and white robe were now saturated with blood, as if they'd been dyed that color. His jewels peeked through the coating of gore, sending out an occasional sliver of light.
I can't deny it, Roxen. I love every damned minute of it. I haven't felt so alive for months.
You look like you're enjoying yourself.
What?
The command center's this way. Let's go!
Going straight for the heart, Roxen!
Yeah. I'm gonna get that bastard Kilov. He's the key. With him captured, we're dead. The crew will fall apart throughout America. But it's gonna be bad in there. Kilov will have his elite forces surrounding the building. The first ones in there are gonna be met by an army. Maybe you should-
Ah! Trying to keep all the fun to yourself, free fighter? Lead on, General Roxen. I have not yet begun to kill.
They galloped down the widest boulevard of Fort Minsk toward the command building. Two blocks ahead, Roxen saw the sandbagged emplacements of the KGB commander's elite forces, ready to give their lives to save Kilov's.
Turn right!
I do not run!
We'll have to come in from the rear.
Such accurate fire! I can see how they took over this land. Is the Red Army that good?
Are you kidding? The Red Army's all conscripts.
I can see why you want them back then. Sounds like your grenadier squad made themselves known.
No, that just sounds like Detroit.
The man can destroy as well as he can drink. Let him know he is welcome to join us as well.
I'll pass it on.
A KGB death shirt jumped out from nowhere, stabbing his 18-inch long bayonet mounted on the barrel of his rifle. The man was too quick for Panchali, and the blade tore into his thigh.
Panchali!
Be quiet, Frida.
Panchali, are you okay?
Panchali's visage didn't betray a hint of pain as he walked toward the fallen KGB man and pulled his sword out of the man's back.
I am much better than this man.
Dozens of black jackets poured from a doorway toward the two.
Roxanne, go! Leave me and get Kilov! My sword and 44 are more than enough for these men.
We're in this together.
The KGB troops closed in on the two warriors, leaders of men, fighters who had earned the right to order soldiers to their deaths. Ordinary people who had joined the KGB because they got a kick out of causing pain didn't have a chance. Within seconds, half of the attacking black shirts were lying on the ground, dead, or wishing they were, as their severed arteries vomited out every drop within. As Rock's 12-gauge shock pistol clicked empty, he pulled out his long-bladed hunting knife, courtesy of the Sioux Nation. Before they knew it, it was over. The two of them stood back to back, their heads snapping around like owls, searching for the next man who wanted to die. But there were no more takers.
I told you to keep going.
Disobeyed orders. You'll have to court-martial me when it's over. How's the leg?
I'll just make a tourniquet and the bleeding will stop.
Can you ride?
My corpse could handle a horse better than most living men. Let's finish this.
They rode for another 5 blocks and came up behind the building. But again, it was as well guarded as the front.
Ah, shit! This ain't gonna work. We can't come in head on. We'll have to sneak in.
Never. A Sikh warrior must attack his enemy head on or...
Or bullshit. If you want to donate your body to the butcher's heap, be my guest. But I'm more interested in ending this whole damn thing. There'll be other wars, pal.
He turned and started toward a smaller building that faced the command center without waiting to see if the Asian general was going to follow. As he came to a locked door and put his shoulder against it, Rock felt the Sikh's presence just behind him.
All right, we'll do it your way. But how the hell are we going to get in there anyway? The
Reds often build underground tunnels linking their various command buildings, just in case of attack. We'll use those tunnels against them.
The two fighters rushed inside, weapons at the ready. But the dimly lit underground passage was unguarded, at least at this end. Doors stood half open on both sides of them, falling half off their hinges. And inside were darkened storage rooms, filled with the scent of rot and decay. Though there were numerous lead-offs heading in all directions, Rock steered them straight on, toward where he figured the command building to be. Sure enough, they came to the end of the main tunnel, and then up some stairs to another floor. He searched frantically around the wide floor, and saw it, the elevator bank. Grabbing Panchali by the sleeve, Rock rushed over and pressed the up button on all four panels.
Get in!
Which floor?
Kilov's office in Denver was on the top of an 80-story building. This one's only 12, but I think he'd still want to be on the top.
Stop!
Come on, come on!
Wait, you're not... You're Ted Roxon! Everybody is
full alert! Ted Roxon is here in the building!
Oh, that's great. Now they know we're here.
Let them wait for us. We will be ready.
We'll have to be. Now, this is it, General. When we hit floor 12, move as fast as you've ever moved in your life. This Kilov is no ordinary man.
No? How interesting. I'm growing bored with killing ordinary men. It's like shooting carp in a pond. Perhaps we will have a worthy challenge.
We're about to find out.
It wasn't that Panchali was slow, but that Roxon was just a millimeter faster. He saw the five men standing yards from the doors, their rifles aimed dead forward, and reacted with the speed of a striking piranha. As he dove forward, Rock kicked Panchali's leg out from under him, bringing the man down like a stone to the corridor floor. Roxon looked out at the charnel ground he had created. His shot pistol was vomiting smoke, and the five KGB assassins were vomiting from their chests. Panchali got up from under Roxon's tackle.
That's the second time, Free Fighter, that you've saved my life. I am growing too indebted to you.
Forget it, man. Just your coming to this country where every goddamn thing seems to want to kill a man or at least take a bite out of him is payment 1,000 times over.
They went down the hall, checking every door they saw, but all the rooms were empty. They came to the last and main door at the end of the corridor. An ornate sword and shield were hung above the golden door. Rock and Panchali looked at each other and nodded.
On three. One, two, three!
Welcome, gentlemen. I've been expecting you. Although I didn't realize I was going to have two guests.
Kilov.
The man sat in a misty dimness at the far end of the room behind a long wooden desk, both hands clasped together on the heavily waxed top.
I'm afraid so, Ted Roxon.
Kilov, you're our prisoner. You will stand trial for war crimes or die right here, right now. However you want it, bastard.
You really should be taught some manners. Pity you won't get the chance to learn.
You must finally be cracking. Look around. There's nobody here but us. You're the one who's finished, not us.
Perhaps there are factors you don't know about.
Like what?
Like
this. Suddenly, the whole front of Kilov's desk flashed, and Panchali jumped in front of Roxon. In a split second, Rox saw the 10 mounted shotguns come out from the desk.
Panchali!
But before a single one of his shells could take root in the mad KGB'er's flesh, Kilov had already pushed another button. A peeled-open steel globe shot up from the floor and snapped closed around his entire chair, shielding the madman inside an impenetrable cocoon. Before Roxon's eyes, a rocket system ignited on the underside of the escape pod. The white ignition flame changed to the blast of an afterburner as the globe shot backward through the building's wall.
No!
Rock peered through the twisted opening, pieces of wall still tumbling to the street below, and saw the escape device shooting through the night like a meteor until it disappeared far over the vast woods to the north of them. Rock let his gaze fall to the streets below, where Free Fighters and Sikhs were streaming past the command building. The KGB was in full retreat now, many of them driving vehicles at full speed, trying to get out the back entrance of the fort. There would be no escape for them. Only their master had made it out. Rock walked back to Panchali and knelt down beside him. The man was still alive, his eyes open and weakly alert. But the Doomsday Warrior had been around too many wounded, too many dying not to know that the Sikh didn't have a chance. He was bleeding in over 30 places, thick streams of red that pulsed and emptied out his life onto the floor around him. Rock reached down and put one arm under the man's head, lifting him slightly so he could breathe easier.
Thank you, Free Fighter. You see, I repaid you. Now we are even.
No. Now I am once again in your debt. And I don't know if I'm gonna get the chance to repay you.
Don't whimper like a raw recruit. I know I'm dying. It's obvious. But, Roxon, do not mourn for me. My life has been a miraculous adventure. And my greatest wish in life, to die in the midst of glorious foreign battle, has been granted. Can you see me growing old and fat, sitting at a desk? No. I go now on the river of my own blood across the Styx into the land of fallen warriors.
He held his hand out and squeezed it tightly around Roxon's.
I shall see you there someday, friend.
All across the length and breadth of America, the results were the same. The KGB vermin were driven out and sent skulking back to their lairs. Some of the forts didn't fall at first, but the big ones did. The ones that mattered. And with their top command centers gone, the rest of the Blackshirts saw the writing on the wall and left with little more than the literal shirts on their backs. The loss of life was staggering, with 25,000 Free Fighters killed, over 50,000 wounded. The Royal Sikh Army took 43% casualties, but the Earth had been saved once again from total and complete darkness. For now, anyway.
Ragdar, where will you go now?
Back to where we landed. Our transports are scheduled to pick us up in 1 week. Then home to Asia, where there is much work still to be done.
sorry about Panchali. He was a great general.
Do not be sorry, Free Fighter. You gave him his greatest desire on this earth, to die with a sword in his hand, the bravest of friends at his side. You don't know how many times he told me, Ragdar, if I grow old and feeble-minded, please send a band of noisy assassins to kill me so that I may go out fighting. He begged me, Roxen, I swear to you. You gave him the greatest gift, perhaps, that he has ever received.
Roxen paused to consider this strange information, and then spoke again.
Ragdar, why do you fight for the Russians, against those who crave freedom? You're a brave man, and I sense a good man. Why do you fight with them?
General Roxen, I don't understand it all either. I have spent my whole life in battle with my hand gripped around a sword and a gun. I have never questioned it. I have just been the best fighter, the best general I could be.
He looked up at the sky, now sunny and clear as a pre-war afternoon, as if the answer to it all lay hidden up there, unreachable.
Perhaps I have been wrong to not question. I don't know. It is too late now. Now that Panchali is gone, soon I am sure I will be gone too. Our fates have always been intertwined, like snakes together. And when we are dust, perhaps the royal army will be no more. Perhaps the rebels we fight will win. Maybe they should. And with our deaths, there will only be warriors like yourselves. Rebels, free fighters. The Russian Empire will be, in the long run, no match for you.
The Doomsday Warrior reached out as he saw his team waiting by the fortress's front gate to depart and shook Ragdar's hand with a long, firm grip. Then, with a deep sadness in his eyes, he turned and rode away. Doomsday Warrior, American Glory. Adapted and directed by Dan Smith. Dialogue editing by Aaron Miller. Digital effects design by Aaron Miller and Chris Rowan. Narrated by James Konacek. With performances by David Coyne, Terrence Aselford, Karen Carbone, Tim Carlin, Michael Glenn, Christopher Grayville, Ken Jackson, James Lewis, Dylan Lynch, Richard Rowan, Nanette Savard, Mort Shelby, and Kate Torrey. Additional red shirts by the Dead Giveaways. Featuring music by Johann Detweiler, Aaron Miller, and Chris Rowan. Doomsday Warrior is a graphic audio production. Copyright 1986, Ryder Severson. Production copyright 2007, The Cutting Corporation. All rights reserved. Produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers, James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. If you enjoyed Doomsday Warrior, be sure to look for Don Pendleton's Stony Man and James Axler's Deathlands. Available at road stops everywhere at 1-800-670-5220 or at www.graphicaudio.net, where you'll also find samples of all our Action Pump titles, as well as free screensavers, desktops, ringtones, and games.